Hi, I'm Nira Pithai.
Hi, I'm Kirby Shibaga.
And I'm Vinay Narayan, along with our program director, Stephen Chu. And in this episode of XRC Pod, we are super stoked to have the CEO of Tactile, Dirk Scow. Dirk, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vinay. Happy to be here.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you as well. You know, we talk a lot about XR and training and applications, but I always feel like there's so much more to this than just some sort of skill set training. And so that's what we're super excited to talk to you about today and really kind of see how this conversation evolves. Just real quick, Dirk, a little bit more about Tactile and you, and how'd you get involved in XR?
Yeah, so Tactile is a company focused on enterprise solutions, leading with XR, but really the focus of the company is how do you make everyone an expert, right? We think that the new platforms that are out there, when you consider head mounted and other wearable technologies, along with, you know, ubiquitous high bandwidth in the form of 5G, and you have unlimited cloud processing power, like how do you bring digital transformation to those 2.5 billion workers that have not experienced it in the same way that the 500 million knowledge workers have experienced it, right? So Tactile, we were one of the first six companies to be invited to the what was then the HoloLens Agency Readiness Program by Microsoft. We actually acquired a game studio in order to get the skill set that we needed, the Unity development and design, that sort of thing, and really sort of leaned into that business. At first, it was being supported to a great extent by Microsoft. This being the XR, focused podcast, we have been firmly focused specifically in spatial computing. We've done a little bit in VR, as has been enabled through the Windows Mixed Reality VR headsets. You know, that's an easy transition from the HoloLens build to that. But again, we're not so focused on the headset. We're focused on enabling digital transformation for heavy industry. This is, you know, oil and gas companies, defense, utilities, manufacturing, that sort of thing.
And I think that's a great perspective, and that we're hoping to explore that a lot more, is really looking at more of that use case. And by the way, congratulations on winning Microsoft's Partner of the Year for Mixed Reality. That's outstanding. Yeah, huge accomplishment. What insights can you share with our audience that really helped you set you on this path for success?
Thank you. Specifically to the window, the Microsoft Partner of the Year award, you know, many companies in this space start with a business plan, some smart people go out, raise some seed funding, and start to build a company. We had our first revenue in this space before we raised a dime. We had the core platform of Manifest, which is our our sole focus. It's our SaaS platform for knowledge capture and reuse, basically. And from the very beginning, we knew that in order to scale in a scrappy sort of bootstrap sort of way, we needed the help of partners, people that could get us into customers that we were never able to get into ourselves. So we sort of made it our mission to be, you know, the secret weapon of a few different partnerships. Microsoft was one of them. Magic Leap, we were actually very early involved with Magic Leap, even before they launched their headset. Some sort of very specific systems integrator types like Booz Allen, who are real experts in working with the government. And actually, that's when I met Nirav. We had the opportunity to mentor Booz Allen into what then became it was originally the HoloLens Agency Readiness Program, yep. Is now the Mixed Reality Partner Program. And
if I could just jump in there, Dirk, I think Tactile is a great example of a company from the ground up set up to be selling to enterprise.
This is true.
You came in with kind of as a studio, right? When we first met and started talking, you were more of a studio doing work for particular large enterprises. And out of that, you built a product and transitioned into, you know, based on a lot of user feedback and what enterprises needed, you formed the right partnerships and transitioned into a product-driven company.
We all have a background in enterprise, right? Enterprise technology has been my entire career since the 90s. And same with John Tamazuka, same with Kelly Malone. He was at Accenture. And you know, Visio, he was early on at Visio, spent 10 years at Microsoft. John Tamazuka was at Tivoli Systems when they got bought by IBM and went to Asia and helped with that transition. So, you know, although we did have products sort of that we were using to build these solutions for enterprises, Manifest was really the stake in the ground that we said, you know what, we're going to go forward and we're going to build a business out of this. And so I'm recalling the original question now. And so, you know, we made it a core tenet of Tactile to work with partners whenever possible. And that can be nuanced, right? It's a more sophisticated thing. You have to have people that have experience in it. So it's not, you know, enterprise is also something very different than consumer, right? It's easy. Nothing is easy in this space, but occasionally an entrepreneur will hit on something that catches consumers' imagination and it can just grow exponentially. Well, when you're introducing a new piece of hardware into an industrial facility that when you walk in the door, every single facility has a sign that says it has been 179 days since our last accident, right? Safety is job number one. And so when you introduce a new way of doing things, when you introduce new hardware, all these sorts of things, it is a long walk from, you know, inception to deployment. And it's challenging and it has different challenges than running, you know, maybe hyperscaling a consumer business, which tends to be more of an architecture issue. You have real human issues to deal with when you're deploying something like this.
And they do not like to change that sign. I want to take it back to zero.
No, that's for sure.
Hey, I have a couple questions there. Again, dealing with enterprise. And, you know, when you first mentioned that you got into spatial computing, one of the first things you did was went out and Aqua acquired a game studio. Mm-hmm. Because those folks kind of have skills with building models and textures and lighting and all of this, and with the game engine itself. When you're working with enterprise customers, are they supplying their own assets and do they have those skills?
Yeah, so I'm just going to spend a moment to tell you what Manifest is. So Manifest is a subscription-based SaaS software product. It enables someone to very easily create and capture knowledge, either with a headset or with a cell phone or an iPad or whatever, and codify that into a set of step-by-step processes that can be followed by anyone who uses the system. And a couple of, you know, one analogy that I give is, as a knowledge worker, you know, my life was transformed when I started to use Microsoft Office, right? Everything, like, I don't have any ledger books anymore. I don't have, you know, like, nothing like that. My life is digital. This is my life. This 18 by 24 inch screen or whatever it is. And my keyboard is how I interface with it. Frontline workers have never had the benefit of this. And that's because they're moving around, they're using their hands in their job, and their problem canvas is not you know, a light emitting screen in front of them. It's the entire world. And so only recently have the computers been available in the form of, you know, HoloLens, Magic Leap. You know, there's, by the way, this is a whole probably other part of the conversation around than just the pure number of OEMs that are starting to launch headsets, which is just mind-boggling at this point. It has only been recently that people have been able to use this sort of a digitally transformative tool. And similarly to Microsoft Office, like when I download Microsoft Office, when I start using it, it's a blank slate. I start typing into Word, or I start creating a spreadsheet or a presentation or whatever. That's what our platform allows as well. You go into an authoring mode and you just start placing step markers in your real world. You set your zero point, you know, in a couple of different ways. And then for each step that you create, you can take a video, put a voice note in, do a voice to text transcription, that sort of thing. And then you can add either before or after, by the way, other assets such as PDFs and holograms and that sort of thing. So I don't intend this to be a product pitch, but in order for you to understand sort of like what our perspective is on the world, we are about knowledge capture in an industrial environment and efficient reuse of that knowledge by people who are either un or under trained to either get trained on a particular process or task, or in fact to just do it, right? If it's a task that involves, okay, go to this control panel, hit these buttons and pull these levers in this sequence and then do this, like this is something that perhaps you don't need training for, right? And a tool that just enables you to do it, it is something interesting there. So I don't know, again, if I answered your question. I've only had a half a cup of coffee this morning. So
yeah, that helps a lot. Just one other quick one there about enterprise. I know a lot of times it's difficult when new products get introduced inside the enterprise. You know, modern products are all based on APIs, but a lot of legacy systems in the enterprise don't have APIs. So how do we get past kind of that lack of sometimes integration? So in other words, you go to introduce this, how do you convince the customer that it's to their benefit to add APIs into their systems? Maybe so that way you can have some feedback going into your training or real time even.
This transformation eventually will require integrated connectivity with all systems, right? Those don't necessarily, as you indicated, not all systems support that at this point. Manifest, our tool, can be that sort of work order system of record, although that's not our goal. Our goal is to integrate into other systems. So our entire system is built around a very functional and it's publicly published, you know, you can just go to a website and look at it, API that allows that integration. For example, so we've done a lot of work with defense around the world. Like Air Force was one of our very first customers. They may have been our first customer. And they did a side-by-side test between using what is a technical order process to repair, to maintain, do a maintenance procedure on a jet engine versus a process that was authored in Manifest. But the only thing that they did was they placed a PDF in space so that someone could look at it and use it in their field of view. And, you know, they weren't using any real spatial. They weren't using step-by-step processes. They weren't using video, anything like that. They eliminated errors across all populations. And this was I believe it was a 20 or 30 something step process. And there's a public report out there about that. We actually on our website, we just published an amalgamation of four different reports done by military groups around the world, talking about how their errors were reduced anywhere between 36% and 100%. And these tend to be very lightweight implementations of the solution. So what does that say? That tells us that even small enhancements using XR technologies can make big results. Now, when you start to think about it in an integrated fashion, you do start talking about integration into IoT systems. And you also start thinking about how you are going to analyze large amounts of data that are being captured as a consequence of, or in just in the deployment of these solutions, right? If you like, there are massive efforts underway to make digital twins of everything in this world. Starbucks is doing 3D mapping of all of their stores so that they can do training and, you know, and redesign and stuff like that better. And so pretty soon when you deploy, when an enterprise deploys a solution like this that enables them to create the content, because let's remember, this is the number one challenge of deploying this technology is how do you enable people to create content? Like if it's going to take you a month to create a step-by-step process because you have to sit down in front of a computer and you have to bring a guy off the manufacturing line, you have to interview them multiple times, et cetera, that's never going to scale. So we made it easy for people to create that content. But when you think about gaining terabytes of data, let's say, then you can start to do other things as well, such as apply, you know, machine learning and computer vision to do just-in-time processes and stuff. And that's down the road. Integration, that is starting to happen now with people that that have those connected systems. We have a number of customers that have integrated into those systems. But the system itself, it's important that the system itself function by itself with no integration, so that you don't have this dependency, right? But as you deploy these systems and you get in there and people see changes and they say, wow, we've eliminated errors, or it's quicker for us to do things than it was before, and we have an ongoing relationship, or our partner has an ongoing relationship like a Booz Allen, they can then say, you know what, how would you like this information to be fed directly into a system that also monitors your other facilities, that sort of thing. So I won't call it a chicken and egg thing, but it's a constant evolution. It's the process of digital transformation that is happening in the industrial world and will continue to happen over the next 20 years, you know?
And I think we appreciate that, Dirk. You know, earlier you said you don't mean this to be a product pitch, but I don't think it is at all. Oftentimes when we look at these XR solutions, you know, we can spend the same amount of time on talking about three or four different use cases, and we really miss, we get it, right? XR is one of the best training platforms ever, but really it's the nuanced approach. It's really taking it from a customer first enterprise solutions, understanding that you're part of a workflow. But when you understand those concepts, and especially when you look at a solution like Tactiles, how do you start talking to your customers? How do you start integrating, and what are some of those pieces? You do have to speak the language. And I think that sometimes that's missing. When we think about decision makers, I will say, like, I appreciate when you talk about the actual frontline workers, that 2.5 billion opportunity. The knowledge workers, when you talk about these various tools, they understand tools exist, and that it actually makes their lives easier for the most part. Frontline workers have a challenge of changing workflow, and also adding angst and anxiety, and sometimes even performance measures that can lead to other impacts. But decision makers too, they're looking at this opportunity. They know that there's an opportunity out there, and oftentimes it's phrased around digital transformation or digital 4.0 or anything of that nature. I know, Nirav, you have a pretty good description of how you look at overall industry 4.0. You want to talk about that real quick, and we can kind of really talk about how that actually applies and what's actually actionable from that.
When I'm looking at the global system, right, there is an increased movement of process automation in the factory. There's an increasing sense of sensors talking to each other, human in the loop, perhaps human out of the loop, depending on what task is being performed, which makes for extremely difficult maintenance posture, because the systems just get so much more complex. It makes workers more productive, but at the same point, they're harder to maintain. And that's the process of Industry 4.0 that's taking place around the world. Your business is as much global as it is domestic. I'd love to get into kind of your thoughts on, you know, next generation visualization of sensor data.
Sure.
In step-by-step instructions, offers a great perspective for a maintainer to interact smartly with the smart systems that are in the factory. Do you see a difference, whether that's locally or globally, in terms of the maturity of factories and how different entities are looking at it?
You know, our business, again, is we have already been set up in a very sort of specific way, right? We work with partners that have a certain type of customers, and they tend to have a filter that eventually brings us the people who are looking to further enhance their Industry 4.0 posture, right? Mm-hmm. And so I won't say that there's a huge difference when you're dealing with a customer, you know, in Australia versus in the U.S. when they're looking at bringing this sort of technology on, right? There are very few of our customers that are not at least thinking about how they're going to eventually integrate this into their systems. And one of the biggest challenges that there were, you know, I mentioned earlier, and I think Vinay, you mentioned something about this as well, is bringing, or maybe it was Kirby, sorry, bringing new hardware into an industrial environment. But the real promise of spatial computing and of augmented reality is the fact that the largest challenge of bringing a new piece of hardware has already been done. Every single person in an industrial facility is wearing safety glasses, right? They are trained to, if they are not allowed to walk onto the factory floor without having safety equipment on, right? And so the challenge is getting the intelligence to that same general form factor. I mean, you look at what the Army has done with enabling sort of the modern warfighter. They've all got a GoPro type camera on here. They've all got all of this wearable stuff. They've got, I don't know, $20,000, $30,000 worth of gear on them at all times. And that, in my opinion, is sort of an extreme example of what you can get away with. But even in a factory, when you have to wear a hat that everyone carries around like a bowling ball, and they've got their glasses and they've got their earplugs, and they may even have to wear a vest, right? They're trained to have to put something on. And so really the challenge is you know, when we first started working with the HoloLens, we would be all excited to show people and everything. And anytime that you showed what we were doing to someone who had a background in VR, they were just like, this is never going to work. The field of view sucks. It's like right here. Yeah. Well, if the field of view was everywhere, there's no way you'd be able to put it on a factory floor, because it would be dangerous, right? If you have too much going on, that's a distraction to someone working in a steel plant or something like that. And the way that a worker uses this technology is very different than a gamer who wants to blow their mind and sort of see the real world. They are focused on this little area. And so even when you look at the HoloLens 1, the field of view is fine when you're talking about an industrial application, right? So again, I went on a bit of a walk there, as you guys are seeing that I do sometimes. But the fact is that, you know, the headsets that are out there right now, they're good. They're going to get better. As soon as, you know, Qualcomm released a very powerful chipset, I believe at the end of next last year, that does 5G and XR. And these are, this is the foundational chipset for 20 different headsets or viewers. Maybe they're tethered to phones or whatever, that are coming out in the next 12 to 18 months. And I feel like we're going to get to that level, you know, sooner rather than later. In the sort of factory floor wearable headsets.
Kirby, I know you have a great background around industry and IT to support industry. I would love your perspective on kind of that vision that Dirk laid out there of heads-up display in the factory environment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's massive for manufacturing in particular, factory settings. Of course, there are challenges. Earlier you mentioned perhaps it's connected to Wi-Fi or enterprise 5G. In some cases, though, and I'm not sure how you get around this. Maybe you do by having it be able to run locally, but sometimes you're in confined spaces or spaces that restrict the frequencies that are allowed in that area of the factory. What do you see happening there? Like, is it maybe better just to do like a mobile-based thing on a phone? Or,
restricted network access is going to affect a mobile device as much as a headset. So, this is part of the practical application of this and how you architect a solution. Coming back to Manifest, we have architected the solution in such a way as it can be deployed in a whole variety of different scenarios. One of our second or third customer was actually the Pacific Subfleet, something that we did a project with Booz Allen, and we spent about a year going through what's called DFARS compliance, which has to do with using, it's procurement, it's a lot of things, but one of the things it covers is how you use a piece of equipment with a camera and a microphone in a security sensitive non-secret environment. So not talking about in a nuclear sub, but just a security sensitive environment. The military is sensitive about recording things in these areas. And so we had to be able to create a way to run to number one, capture step-by-step processes and execute step-by-step processes in a completely disconnected environment. So not just in an air-gapped environment, which we, by the way, also support for a lot of defense and pharmaceutical, other high security environments. You can run the entire system in an air-gapped environment, but also in a completely disconnected mode, either on our iPad app or on our app for one of the headsets. So at that point, you know, you don't have input from systems with the exception of observable input. There's some really interesting tools that are coming out to sort of retrofit non-IoT capable environments, such as devices that listen for sound frequencies, mm-hmm. right? Like if you can, an expert on a particular machine will know, like, just by listening to it, just listen to your car. Like, you know, when there's a weird sound, when your car is running weird, like you know that, okay, that's new, right? We need to go in. So there are other ways that you can sort of accomplish those goals, but in a disconnected environment, you have to get creative.
And Dirk, to your credit, going through that DFAR thing, you definitely managed to get through that with more hair than I did.
Well, it's because I didn't do it. John Tomasukade, our CTO, he's the one that sat with your team at Booz Allen going through that. So
that's hilarious. Yeah, I think we all have implementation battle scars that that stays with us. Dirk, guys, this has been actually a lot of fun. And I think kind of it's what we were really looking forward to and really getting into some of the details, some of the specifics as we talk about implementation of these various types of solutions. This does sound very fascinating and you almost want to get up and jump in and start to solve problems, but I almost get a sense for these problems are so big and so complex, they're really for large companies. So really a couple questions for everybody. Is this really only for large manufacturing companies and enterprises? And where's the ROI? How do I convince those key decision makers that, you know, this is a tool that they can implement now, especially as we look at a very shifting economy and different global challenges?
I'll jump in. This is absolutely a solution that can be implemented now. That's one of our messages to the world. For example, there's a company called PBC Linear. They manufacture bearings and other infrastructure pieces of equipment for a lot of national labs and other companies, and they are using Manifest to enable their customers to understand better how to work these cobots that they're selling into environments. And so with each one of these cobots they sell a license of Manifest and a headset, that's an option, right? And this is something that's just getting going, but this is a small manufacturer. You know, King County in their West Point wastewater treatment plant right here in Seattle has been using this solution for 2 years. They started using it after they had an incident in 2017 where raw sewage entered the Puget Sound, which is obviously a big no-no, and they had to implement new backup procedures and training procedures and everything. And this is a wastewater treatment plant. This is not, Stark Industries, right? This is a foundational element of our modern civilization that is typically considered very old school, right?
I remember that. Yeah. Real quick, Dirk, I remember that sense of urgency, that spill. A lot of people knew about it, and there was definitely a timing. How were you guys able to really convince the administrators that one, that this was the solution and here's how to act now? Like, how did that come about?
Well, Tanya Hanna, the CIO of King County, honestly came looking for us. She didn't know she was looking for us. Again, the value of partnerships for a small company, we are what's referred to as a co-sell ready managed partner of Microsoft. And when Tanya came to Microsoft, they have a great partnership with Microsoft, and she said, we need a solution for this. Microsoft gave us a call and said, we think that Manifest is going to accomplish what Tanya's vision was. And we were able to sit down. There's actually a great great video that we did with Tanya Hanna where she talks about, why they did what they did, and by the way, also their vision for this technology and the platform going forward. This was a solution. There's a lot of businesses out there, right? One really interesting thing about one unique thing about the U.S. market is that there are 100,000 companies in the U.S. that would be top 10 company in any other country in the world, right? And like, there are multi-billion-dollar companies that you never heard of, right? And so the sheer volume of challenges that the American infrastructure, whether it's manufacturing or if it's natural resources or it's utility or energy, that sort of thing, there are so many companies out there that have challenges that they're trying to deal with that, a little company like Tactile, there's no way that we could address all of it if they all came knocking on our door at once, right? And so it tends to be easy to identify for us and for our potential customers to pick us out of a crowd when they say, hey, this is the company that can solve your problem. Again, going back to partners, if we train our partners well, they will know what sort of customers to bring us, and they'll know that it's going to be a perfect fit, right?
Yeah, great highlight. And especially quick shout out to all of those marketing and PR teams and comms teams that actually have talked about the benefits of XR in the enterprise space, because in your example of the CIO knowing that there is a solution out there, or a technology out there, not necessarily what that solution is. And then of course the Microsoft partner network to make those connections. So super huge. I know that Kirby and Nirav, you guys also have kind of opinions on, is this large scale, where's the ROI?
So when I think about disruption, I don't think about an industry, right? Large risk averse mission critical industry is often, doesn't get disrupted, they transform. And that transformation happens through their suppliers. So when you ask the question of, is this only for large enterprises or is it for small businesses? It's for both, because the innovation happens through the suppliers. A small supplier that implements a process improvement that makes it more efficient transforms the whole industry. And so when you're thinking about things like augmented reality maintenance, augmented reality safety procedures, that's the differentiator that transforms the industry. And that could happen at the enterprise large level or an interesting startup, small business, what have you.
Yeah, and for me, one of the things I think about is always the end user, you know, what's their pain point, having empathy for what they're going through by observing or just interviewing them, et cetera. And technology like this can definitely help. There's going to be return relatively quickly. The devices are not that expensive, even for a small company to think about implementing. The other point that I want to make there, though, is a lot of times companies have issue or difficulty when employees leave. They retire or whatever, they transfer out to a different department, and just getting that knowledge transfer, the tribal knowledge out of a worker to the next worker, right there, if you had a system like this and you could almost replay what the expert does, the new folks would be trained much, much quicker. And that's a return on investment.
So Kirby, just to sort of dig into that point, we're 6 or 7 months, however, into this sort of COVID thing, and everyone's talking about enabling people around COVID. But prior to this point, one of the main sort of value areas that we talked about, and that is a general opportunity for this space, is the fact that you have something occurring right now that's called the silver tsunami. And that is that older workers are retiring in massive numbers, and there's not enough workers coming in. And so the question that we asked ourselves is, okay, how do you teach one person to be an expert at three things? Let's say for every three workers that are retiring, you have one worker coming in. So how do you teach one worker to be an expert at three things that these people spent 20 years at doing? And the fact is, you can't. But what you can do is you give them a platform that allows them to be an expert at 20 different things. And that way, that person, and the way that you do that is you capture the knowledge of those most skilled workers in a way that is not, that's not daunting to them, something that is very natural, that you can, in effect, with some minor modifications, basically just have them do their job and capture that knowledge in that process, not in an unstructured way like YouTube does it, but in a structured way that is a step-by-step process that every single frontline worker does, whether or not you're a surgeon, you're an airplane pilot, you're operating an industrial facility, or you're in a manufacturer. You're gonna follow a step-by-step process, whether or not that's necessarily a documented process or if it's something that's just intuitive. But that's, Kirby, you use the term tribal knowledge. This is the same term that Tanya Hanna uses when she talks about why a CIO at King County, why they implemented Manifest, is to capture that tribal knowledge and to make it available to anyone. So that if you're working on this diesel engine, regardless of where you are in the world, you have access to that step-by-step process. And then there's other nuance that comes in, like how do you connect people remotely, experts, that sort of thing, which is all you know, part of the broader solution. But I just think that that was a very interesting point that you brought up there. It's about capturing that institutional knowledge, creating that sort of digital soul of the facility, the process, you know, the industry.
Digital soul, I like that.
Yeah, I think we all have some aspect of digital soul, and that's such a, you know, we all had kind of different perspectives around where is the opportunity in terms of size, customer, ROI, and the reality of all of it's correct. That's one of the most amazing things about enterprise solutions in general. They scale. They kind of have to, right? In terms of the existing business problem, the teams are solving these problems for these challenges. And so we see that time and time again. Looking back in your time in XR, if you had to give yourself some advice as you were stepping in into the XR space, what would it be? I think if I can, I'll just kick it off. So I think when I look back at my time and getting into XR, if there's anything I wish I would have done differently, and I think if anything, it was the perspective. While we were getting Vive off the ground, and this is really pre-Vive and pre-prototypes or pre-dev kits, early prototypes, there's still QR codes on the walls, and we knew we were up to something very special. But you know, some of us also had our business hats on too, and there was a sense of urgency there of really trying to make something happen real soon. You know, while looking at data and looking at different experiences, we knew that it was going to take time. I wish I would have taken the time a little bit more to appreciate the journey, to appreciate these moments of how special it is and how special those moments in time were. Because those key learnings, those key moments, we're all going to get there in terms of solution. And we're all going to get there when we need to get there. And if you follow the customer journey, follow customer problems, and listen, then you're going to have a business around it. So taking the time to just really enjoy the moment and know that we're in the beginning of something even more than sometimes people say, this is the iPhone moment, even more than that. We're definitely at this next generation compute moment, and it's going to take all of us together working in our various ways and various experiences to really bring that. So just really taking a step back and just really appreciating that. And we're still there. I mean, that time has not passed. At least now we have a little bit more infrastructure. The roads are starting to get built, not paved yet even. And so being able to really take this moment going forward as a lesson learned.
You know, that's a good point. I mean, I think I was definitely impatient with the industry or have been. And, you know, there are definitely concrete, real use cases for VR and AR right now. They're not always what we initially thought they would be. I mean, the industry has made some pivots from consumer to enterprise and deciding between training or planning and which one's going to come first or operations. I would say looking back, I would probably guide myself to be more patient because there was no way to completely predict what use cases would take off and which one, aside from consumer not taking off first.
Hey, but you know, all emerging industries really take off in enterprise. So we all knew that. And so I think that goes to prove, you know, your experience matters considerably in an emerging technology sector.
And it's similar for me, especially being, you know, early adopter where I buy all the gadgets as soon as they come out. I had thought, oh man, this is gonna happen like overnight. We're gonna have awesome XR experiences and it's just going to be cool. And for me, similar to what Nerv said, is just realizing that it may take longer than we think. Yet anybody who, if I could have went back and talked to myself, I would have said, start small, look for the business value, demonstrate that, and just, you know, like any startup, just build on that, iterate and iterate. Whereas I think early on, I had a much bigger vision that wasn't possible at the time.
I mean, this is a super common theme. I'll give my sort of perspective on this because I think it's the same thing. It's about patience and understanding. I mean, I think that where we're at right now is at the sort of Palm Pilot sort of stage, you know, which was still 5 years before the iPhone came out, right? I don't think that's, we're not, you know, every technology cycle accelerates rapidly. If you, there's some very famous sort of timelines that talk about how long it took to get a certain percentage of penetration of telephones from the time that the first phone was invented to this level. But if you looked at like the cell phone penetration, it's like a fraction of that. And it's so every one of these technology cycles sort of gets compressed, right? So I think that we're closer to scale than we thought. But it had to do with patience and vision as well. When John Tomaszewski and I went down into the basement of Building 92 at Microsoft and saw the first HoloLens, we were just like, oh my God, we have to get going now. This is going to be revolutionary. We have to be there. Now, I think part of that comes from that may be a factor of, let's call it experience, i.e. we're sort of old when it comes to the innovators out there. We've seen a number of cycles and we said, oh man, I thought that was going to happen and it did, and I should have jumped in there. So maybe there's an element of impatience because we want to make sure that we're getting there with the right solution. You know, early on when we did a lot of traveling around the world, honestly, with Microsoft in the early days of the HoloLens, and we did an event at Sawgrass.
Oh, right, the early HoloMap stuff.
Yeah, and we were there with Panos Panay, who is a fairly senior guy at Microsoft, and we were just like super excited and aggressive and everything, and he said, "You guys better prepare yourself for a long ride," and we were just like, "What do you mean? Like this stuff is amazing." It's like, and you know, we had this early application, which we still do, and it's publicly available, called HoloMaps, that allows you to visualize all these different locations in the world holographically. It's like I was watching the Hunger Games with my 17-year-old daughter last night, and in the Mockingjay, the last episode, I believe it is the fourth movie, they have this thing called the Hollow, and they sit around it and it shows a map of the city. That's what HoloMaps does. And when you see it, it's mind-blowing. But you have to understand, like, what is the practical application of it, who needs this right now, like that sort of thing. And so Kirby, you said you know sort of slow and steady. That's not like, if you're in this industry, if you're in tech, you know, that's not the way that things are told to be done. That's the way that we did things. Like we did, you know, we did services work, we focused on profitability, we, you know, all this stuff. And so we were able to survive when so many other companies didn't, right? Because we were focused on blocking and tackling and solving real problems. But like, if you're raising money in the XR space right now, you know, you're faced with VCs who put tens of millions of dollars into bad headsets and gaming technology 7 years ago, and they're waiting for ROI. So like this ability to show ROI, this ability to show not just demoware, right? You cannot get away with a proof of concept or a vision or something. I mean, maybe some people can, very well connected, if you have this sort of background and history, like that's one thing, but it has been like, what would I tell myself? I would say, be patient. Don't forget your family. Don't forget to live. Don't forget to sleep, you know, that sort of thing, because the world doesn't change quite as quickly as maybe you thought, at least in this regard, it hasn't. But, you know, to everyone's point, like right now, the headsets are good enough. There's enough scale out there that if you have a very specific use case, like, look for that sort of customer that is a perfect fit for that use case, and engage with them around ROI and all that, and you'll be successful.
That's a super sound and very tangible advice from everyone. I'm definitely, you know, when it comes to patience and iteration, are all big things. And quite frankly, it doesn't mean you go slow, right? Even if you do those things well. And of course, you know, if you want to talk about platform architecture, the long-term horizon, and even your business architecture, that horizon. You start to combine those and you realize there's a lot of work to do today, a lot of work to do tomorrow, but you're a little more focused on that. Well, guys, this has been outstanding. This has been so much fun. And I feel like even some tidbits, almost always at the ends of these, you're like, there's a couple more episodes that I want to talk about. I don't know, Dirk, has anybody told you, if you ever wanted to be a lecturer or an educator, I think you have a great future in that. And I'd sign up for one of your classes.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the conversation and the whole group here. So thank you so much for having me.
Cheers. Thanks for being on. Yeah. And that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much for joining us here on XRC Pod. You can find us on xrcpod.com as well as where you find your podcasts. And thank you so much for joining, and let's innovate together.